Good morning. This is Right Here, Right Now, brought to you by Right Choice Services. At Right Choice Services, we develop individualized programs to help clients find that book inside of them that they've always wanted to write. I'm your host, Tim Morrison. On Right Here, Right Now, we interview business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals about their work and the writing they engage in as a part of their work. My co-host and producer for Right Here, Right Now is Kevin Finn. Kevin wears the hats of producer, engineer, co-host, and host. All of that for Business Radio X. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning, Dr. Tim. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you? We've had you working since oh dark early.
Oh, yeah. I've been here since 8 o'clock, but I just got back from the beach, so.
Oh, it hurt me. Yeah, Kevin and I did some interviews of the owners of BRX earlier today.
Mm-hmm.
For
it was
some
a lot
work
of fun.
It was. Well, whether the concept appears in the promo that we provide for each Right Here, Right Now broadcast on the Right Here, Right Now website, we always want our guests to tell us how their business or their endeavors differ from others in their field. We believe it's critical for the success of any business to be able to state clearly and concisely what makes it unique. And today's guests offer solid experience and advice on how to establish that uniqueness and profit from it. Hence, we have the theme of adventures and possibilities that emerge from unique perspectives. You know, the books abound on advice for surviving divorce, and there are seminars and workshops and counselors and attorneys. A wealth of material, some good, some not so good. Lisa Decker focuses on the financial aspects and issues of divorce. She uses the tag, divorce your spouse, not your money. And as with the topic of divorce, a whole bunch of material can be found on entrepreneurship and starting one's own business. Jim Beach provides a different kind of forum on starting a business. And we'll begin with Lisa. Lisa Decker has 20 years of experience in running a successful construction-related business. She's engaged in real estate sales and investing, as well as in health education. Today, she is a certified divorce financial analyst and CEO of Divorce Money Matters. And she's written a comprehensive program on divorce, Secrets to a Sane, Savvy, Money-Saving Divorce. That's even alliterative. Good morning, Lisa, and welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So tell us about Divorce Money Matters.
Well, it deals with the money matters of divorce, just as it says there. And basically what I do as a divorce financial analyst, or better known as a divorce financial planner, is to help people understand what they own, what they owe, what's owed to them, as well as the money that they have coming in and going out, and where are their gaps and how can we fill those in a divorce situation. So it's a very valuable service for people who are going through the process and want to gain clarity and confidence as they step into the next chapter of their lives.
Other than the fact that the topic, what's the difference between a certified divorce financial analyst and a regular certified financial analyst?
Well, we have a special training and certification in the money matters of divorce. And I must tell you that I have worked and been trained as an investment advisor. And that experience really did not lend itself completely to all of the intricate details and complexities that are involved regarding money and divorce.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have multiple issues regarding the assets and the liabilities, especially among the debts. We find a lot of traps. There are tax traps as well. Real estate is another area, retirement. I could go on and on with the list of problem areas that we see in divorce. And that's why you need somebody who's truly trained specifically in those areas to help you avoid those problems.
Well, when you do your work, are you an advocate for one side against the other? Are you a mediator? What's your role?
Well, it depends on how I'm hired. Lots of times people come to me and they want an advocate, a member, an addition to their divorce team. And I do believe in having a team. Your team should consist of, at a minimum, a legal advisor, a divorce financial planning advisor, a therapist, and potentially a divorce coach. I actually happen to be a coach as well, so that means I can help take people step by step through the process. A a divorce financial planner differs again in the way in which we engage and work with clients. And I work with men and women, so I can be an advocate for either side, or I can be a neutral if they come and they want to work together as a couple, or I'm brought in on a mediation type setting. Mm-hmm.
The words that you use, they roll off your tongue, but they're making pictures in my mind, which is not unusual for a writer. But you talk about divorce financial planning, and it's almost like planning to divorce, and we get our money in line, but that's not exactly what you do, right?
No, this isn't about, trying to pull the wool over someone's eyes. Mm-hmm. This is about being smart from the start, because you have to handle your divorce like a business. This is the business of your life. And if you don't do things properly, you may be on the other side having regrets. Mm-hmm. You may be faced with tax bills to Uncle Sam. You may have credit issues that follow you through the rest of your life. You may be shortchanged. There are smarter ways to go about things, and that's what this is about. Not plotting to get to be against someone, mm-hmm. but really about being smart in your decision-making process.
So that part of the healing would not have to include, oh, she got me or he got me, they mm-hmm. took me, that
right.
kind of thing.
Right.
And divorce coaching, what does a divorce coach do?
Well, it goes beyond just handling the money matters or crunching the mm-hmm. numbers. Mm-hmm. I like to tell people, I'm here as a guide. I will take your hand and lead you through step by step in the process so that you have this understanding of your options. There are more than one ways to get a divorce, and that can be anything from what we call alternative dispute resolution methods, which are more peaceful methods, mediation, collaboration, all the way up to, we've got one heck of a case here, and we got to fight for your rights, and that may be on to the full mode of litigation and heading to court. But we look at that, and we say, where are you in this spectrum? What do you need to do to protect yourself, get your fair share? And I also help assemble a team as a coach. So I have an incredible network of professionals that I can reach out to if we need an attorney, a mediator, a therapist, a mortgage banker, a realtor, an insurance specialist, a child specialist, whatever the case may be. I can find those professionals across the country. I do analysis in Georgia only because the laws are state specific, mm-hmm. and so I do full analysis in the state of Georgia. But across the country, clients call me and they want to put a foundation in place. They want someone to help them understand the basics, and then I help them assemble a team in their area.
Wow, that's impressive. How did you get into this work?
It was kind of a divine thing. I was actually in one of my training classes for my investment advising role, mm-hmm. and I met a woman who said she was a CDFA, and like so many people say to me, I said, a what? Uh-huh. She said, I'm a certified divorce financial analyst, and so I looked into the work, and it was quite fascinating, and I felt like it would be a good fit for the clients that were coming to me, add value to them, and help me, frankly, stand apart in the market from all the other financial advisors that were out there. So it was a good move to make for my clients and also for my business.
So you've got a background in construction mm-hmm. and health, mm-hmm. and so the logic in being where you are now is not that there has to be any, but How did you make all of those transitions?
I just believe in going with the flow of how we're divinely being guided. And mm-hmm. My husband and I owned a construction-related business in Florida for nearly 20 years. And after we had enough of heat, humidity, and hurricanes, we decided that it was time to sell and move out of the state. Landed here and was recruited into an international financial services company, and that's wow. what led me to that. In the interim, I was diagnosed with breast cancer, and that's how I taught a health program. So
oh my goodness.
I've gone from matters of teaching about health to wealth and beyond.
Wow. I'm still caught up on heat, humidity, and hurricanes. That's you like alliteration, don't you?
I do.
So how did you come up with that tagline, divorce your spouse, not your money?
I'm a very creative soul, I guess you would say, and I like alliteration, and lots of things come to me. You'll find that I'm a very creative person. Mm-hmm. Not only have I do I have this business where I work with clients individually, I am also creating several other businesses, you know, like to put together combinations of words that help people understand what they're about. May I share a few of those things?
Oh,
with
sure.
You?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Last year, I created an event called Speed Divorcing. This is not about getting a fast divorce. It's a workshop, like think of speed networking or speed dating.
Mm-hmm.
It's a workshop where I bring together all of the folks that you should consult with if you're thinking about divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Every one of those team members that I mentioned earlier. I bring them all together into one place and one time for confidential consultations. We literally have a roundtable discussion, and then we break out into sessions, and folks are able to move from table to table getting those confidential consultations. We ring the bell. They move to the next station. By the end of the workshop, they have had a comprehensive overview of all of those matters that matter in their life and their divorce.
Oh, my goodness. I like that.
It's really been phenomenal. CNBC did a full spread on us, and we're taking that and expanding that this year with the Divorce Help and Hope Fair and bringing to Atlanta the first of its kind, where we have an expo combined with speed divorcing and workshops so that people can come in and get a full day of resources and information and professionals to reach out to.
And that's, go ahead, when's it going to be and all that stuff?
We will be having our first one in the fall. DivorceHelpAndHope.com will have all the details on that. In addition, I'm launching a new website called DivorceTown, and DivorceTownUSA.com will be coming out in the next few weeks. This will be an online community where we'll be holding offline events as well, bringing together people who need support and education in local meetups. We'll also be doing networking for the professionals so that they can have targeted ways to get mm-hmm. together and do referrals, no more shot-in-the-dark kind of networking going on. And it will be a place for those who seek to connect with those who serve. We're going to have a tremendous amount of things going on that website, and that's going to be a national site, but we're launching it here in Atlanta.
Wow, that's exciting.
It seems like the cons outweigh the pros about getting married, and it seems like emotionally people want to do it. It's socially driven, but financially it seems like a horrible business decision. Are there any real pros financially of getting married?
Well, yes, and I'm a proponent of marriage. I've been with my husband 34 years.
Oh, and so, I think marriage is beautiful and great.
But you do want to be smart about it as well. Look, if you've got assets going into a marriage, then protect those. I always believe that people should be smart in any decision-making process. So have conversations with your soon-to-be spouse. Talk about what are your philosophies, what is your history, how did you grow up thinking about money, what are your goals in the marriage. If you want to be, you know, the high-paid executive that's doing a lot of traveling, are both of you on board with that?
Yeah.
If one of you is going to stay home and raise the children, how are you going to work that financially? If you have credit problems in the past, I encourage people to pull out their credit reports and let's sit down and review them together. Know what you're getting into. Have those conversations early, and that will lead to a better marriage.
How do we get our hormonal 18, 20-year-olds that information before they just rush out there and get married on a whim because they're madly in love, and then 10 years down the road, they're in the biggest mess of their life?
10 years. 10 weeks down the road,
yes,
not
exactly.
10 years. Come on, let's be real.
Exactly.
You know, that's a great point. And I have to tell you that when I was teaching the breast cancer program, I was in high schools and colleges and community centers, and I taught nearly 20,000 people over a five-year period. I had a lot of conversations with kids and teachers about money. It's something that's always been fascinating to me,
mm-hmm.
and I realized very early on, growing up very poor, that why do some people live one way and other people live another? And I tell you, we're lacking in financial education in this country.
Definitely.
And part of that financial education should be, you know, how to have money as a single person, how to be wise about it as a married person, how to make, well, we don't certainly don't want to train children in high school about making decisions and divorce, but, you know, there should be some understanding that if you don't make these smart decisions here or you don't have good communication about finances, that you're leading down the path to divorce possibly. I believe that by educating people at much younger ages, that we can help stem the tide of the financial problems that we have going on now. It's really one of my my desires is to change the world by changing the way that we communicate about money and teaching people from a very early age.
I think that's great. I think that's going to help future generations. If we can get the financial point across, people are going to be more successful, and we're going to have less of just dumb people breeding more dumb people. Okay. I hate this.
Well, there's that. And you know, I'm sitting here listening to this and holding on to the table because I've been on both sides of, you know, as a pastor, I counseled people prior to their getting married. And I knew full well that even though we had the sessions together, there was no guarantee those marriages would last. I've also counseled people on getting ready for divorce and being divorced. I've gone through divorce and remarriage myself. Both times had counseling, so it didn't work, but did it work? You know, so it's all on how the parents present a lot of what goes on and how we show what really matters in a relationship. The one thing that I would always say to couples is you got to understand that there's something about marriage that changes everything. And the primary thing is you can't go home again. You can, but when you're dating, you know, it's you can go home and it's okay. It's not so okay when you're married. That person is still there. And as odd as that may sound, it makes a world of difference. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It makes a world of difference. Well, what role does writing play in your work? I mentioned in the opening that you've written a comprehensive program, Secrets to a Sane, Savvy, Money-Saving Divorce. And that's when I first spoke of alliteration.
Well, I think for any business owner, writing is critical. Not only to engage folks so that they want to learn more about your services. Mm-hmm. So I think it starts from the very first time that people come to your website or read your brochure that they want to learn more about what you do and how you serve them. So I think it's critical from the very beginning that you are able to capture attention, bring them into the fold, have something for them so that you can continue to market to them. On my website, I give away a free divorce prep and planning kit, divorce financial fitness kit. Excuse me, I just changed the kit that I have up there. So in the divorce financial fitness kit, they're able to get more resources. And then, of course, because they've requested that information, I now have their name and their email so I can continue to send them information. And hopefully they'll become clients along the way if they need the services. So I think it's very important that people with a business have good writing skills to stay engaged with their clients and continue to market to them.
Now, before we went on air, you, like so many of my guests, say, can you give me a hint what you're going to ask me? And I said, well, we're just going to see where the conversation goes, just for fun. One of the questions I have written down here is, what advice would you offer to people thinking about writing about their business? And you just answered that without my even having to ask it. It's critical, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. It is.
Well, do you have a book that has influenced you in your life?
I love the book Think and Grow Rich. It's an old classic
by
Napoleon Hill.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it influenced my life tremendously. Because I'm very intrigued on successful people. How did they become that way? What are their mindsets? And that book was just one of those pivotal books in my life that really changed the way that I looked at things. And I find it so curious that, you know, when you look at people who talk about New Age stuff, they're talking about laws of attraction and manifestation. And here these folks were the Rockefellers and the Fords and all of the richest men of our time, not our time, prior time,
yeah.
That were literally already using those principles. So I think they're really not mm-hmm. new. They're old, rediscovered.
And Andrew Carnegie funded that
yes.
book, that research. Have you read Hill's recent one, Conversations with the Devil?
No.
You haven't even heard of it, I mm-hmm. gather, by the look on your face. Mm-hmm. It is an amazing book. And his wife would not allow it to be printed as long as she was alive because she felt that it would create such a furor. And I forget how long ago she died, but the estate put it out, I think, last year. And it is an amazing, amazing book.
I'll have to read that.
Just almost as, or equally as powerful as Think and Grow Rich. So, Lisa, how do people contact you?
Well, the best way to contact me is on my primary website, which is divorcemoneymatters.com. And I do have ways for individuals, couples, and professionals to connect with me and stay in the loop of things that are coming up and going on. And I would love to do that.
Okay. And you want to give us that website again?
DivorceMoneyMatters.com.
There you go. So I'm assuming that you're going to stay with us while I turn in my chair and interview our next guest.
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Jim Beach started his first business at the age of 25. Jim teaches entrepreneurship, has worked with the Japanese government, and has been an adjunct faculty member at a university. In 2009, Jim founded SchoolForStartups.com. He's the executive director of InternationalEntrepreneurship.com, and he recently started two new radio shows, Restaurant Owner Radio and School for Startups Radio, both of which are on Business Radio X. So I've got a colleague on the show today, across the table, and with co-authors, Jim wrote School for Startups, published by McGraw-Hill in June of 2011. And so, Jim, welcome. How's it feel on the other side?
It's much more nerve-wracking.
Is it really?
Sure, yes. I'm afraid you're going to ask a question I'm not prepared for. I'm going to have to reshuffle my note cards.
There you go. You're doing that on purpose, aren't you?
Yes.
Remember, I'm on your show in a month.
Uh-huh.
So, okay. School for Startups. What is it? How did you develop it? What do you want to do with it, or what are you doing with it?
Well, it came about while I was teaching down at Georgia State University. I had been working there for 8 or 9 years, and during the first semester that I was there, I made a bet with my students that I could start a business that semester and make it profitable by the end of the semester. And that went well, and I did it 12 times in a row, betting with my students. And I did an interview with a reporter, and the reporter said, "Wow, that's really interesting. You should write a book on this." And I made a bet with the reporter that if he found a publisher, that I would write the book. And that became School for Startups. And at the same time, we decided to create an online learning center so that people who read the book could have a further set of resources. And so we filmed about 80 hours of online educational material that accompanies the book and sort of builds on the themes presented in the book. And those 80 hours are available for free for anyone who buys the book for the massive $11 that Amazon is charging. So we feel like it's quite a bargain.
Well, that is. Mm-hmm. That is. That doesn't sound like what an entrepreneur would do, but it's working for you.
I'm not sure what an entrepreneur would do. Entrepreneurs are people that solve problems, and I see the problem of people not knowing how to start businesses for small amounts of money. Okay. We focus entirely on starting businesses for under $5,000. We don't think that anyone should start a business for over $5,000. And so we teach those special skills, how to start a business for no money, bootstrapping, the things that are needed for that particular set of entrepreneurs. You know, not everyone has the ability to go and raise $1 million to start a business or something like that. Most of us need to start businesses with no money. And so that's what the School for Startups is devoted to doing.
Why did you decide to challenge your students? That's a pretty gutsy move.
Well, I had my ego was extraordinarily large at the time. It's still a problem, but at that time it was even worse. And I had just sold a business with 700 employees that I had started.
Uh-huh.
And so, you know, I started my first business when I was 25, and when I was 31, I sold it with 700 employees. And so I was like, this stuff isn't very hard, you know, because of my experiences at that time indicated that it was not very hard. It was much easier to start a business than to get a job, for example. And so, you know, I was telling my class this stuff is pretty easy, and they were like, no, it's not. And I was like, yes, it is. And they were like, no, it's not. And I was like, yes, it is. And so we just, you know, my ego stumbled its way into a bet.
What business did you start that semester? Do you remember?
Yeah, sure. It was one of my favorites, actually. This was right after 9/11, like literally days after 9/11. And so the class thought it would be funny if I had to start a business in Pakistan. And they also thought it would be funny if I had to start a furniture business, because it's well known that I hate furniture businesses. And so I had to start a Pakistani furniture company. I had 3 months to make it 100% profitable, repay all the startup capital, and get it cash flowing positive. And it's still out there. You can go on timelesschair.com and check out the products and see what we came up with.
How did you keep your students involved in the process, or were they constantly keeping you involved by saying, so how's it going?
Well, you know, we had no textbook, no homework, or nothing to, you know, to actually do. There was nothing that would be considered normal educational. Every week I simply came in and said, here's what I did in the last 5 or 6 days, and here's what I plan on doing in the next 5 or 6 days. One day I would walk in with a sample chair. You know, our first chair had arrived from Pakistan. But before that, I had to say, well, here's how I found the people in Pakistan. Here's the communication. Here's how I found 6 companies that might be interested. So I taught them how to go about the process of finding companies across the world without ever going there. I never went to Pakistan to run a business there. And then 2 or 3 weeks later, I walk in with a sample chair and say, here's my first sample. What do we think? And we cut it in half and analyzed the insides and sent back requests for changes. And then the next week I'd say, well, we better start building a website. So we would sit down in class and build a website together. And then the next week was like, well, how are we going to market this? And we would figure out a marketing plan. So the entire pedagogical approach was one of action and observation. There was absolutely no tests, nothing for them to do except just follow along. But they all loved it. It was one of their favorite classes, of course, because there was no work for them to do, but also because they learned in a very, very action-oriented type of way.
Absolutely.
Well, just to give you some kudos, I don't know if you know, we had one of your students on, I don't know if Dr. Tim even remembers, months ago. It was Adisha Shumate, and she created a company. She's very high regards of Five Wives is her company, but now she's an entrepreneur. She was very shy, timid girl, but after your class, she had the courage to start a company, and now she's successful.
Yeah, I love Adisha. She's one of my favorite people in the world. She's an absolutely wonderful Christian with a wonderful pastor father, by the way, up in Tennessee. But she's done some amazing things with her business. I've been very proud of the way she's grown it. I think she has about 40 clients or something now.
She's doing great.
She's doing fantastic. Not quite 100% supporting herself, but getting really, really close. And she started with zero money. And zero creativity and zero risk. It's exactly true. Zero confidence as well. So it's been wonderful to watch her blossom because of the company creation process and the changes that have happened in her personality. You know, it's interesting, Kevin. For the last 2 or 3 weeks, you and I have been talking about my wife.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And my wife is one of the shyest women in the world. Very, very reserved, quiet girl. And to watch her bloom and blossom and to get on the phone with a supplier and say, hey, I whatever the conversation she has, it's been amazing to watch her personality change and to see her bloom and become more outgoing as a business owner. It's affecting her, too. It's
money changes everything.
It's not money. That's a totally different – that's true. It's a different story, but it's not money. It's just the confidence that comes from someone bought something from me. They paid money to buy something from me. And whether it's a 12-year-old, you know, getting paid to wash a car or walk a dog or something, it's an incredible thing to do to improve someone's confidence.
A lot of pride goes with that.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up because Adisha was on the show, I think it was back in October, November, and she was just so effusive with gratitude for being on. I thought, goodness, you're doing me a favor by being on, because I think her Five Wives concept was so amazing.
Yes.
You know, she probably shared with you, it all started when a group of friends were sitting around on a Saturday or something talking about, and the guy said, I wish I had somebody, and she said, I could do that. And it came down to what you need is a wife. So it's Five Wives, everything but that.
I was the one who came up with that tagline, by the way. Yes. I was
the one. Surprising now.
That's Jim humor. I can tell you see that.
Well, I think that tagline's one of the funniest out there. And so, Adisha's done a great job. There have been some other clients or other
students
of ours on the BRX network, too, that we've been particularly proud of.
Talk about them. Now that I put you on the spot.
Tierra Destiny Reed. Do you remember her, Kevin?
I think so.
African-American woman. She was an amazing story. And I actually have video of her coming out of my conference like 3 years ago, an event that we did. And she was you know, she was dressed up for a Sunday, and so she wasn't looking, you know, glamorous or anything. And she was just talking about how she had so many ideas of businesses that she could start now and things that she could wanted to do. And she, you know, spent some time talking to me and said her goal was to have a high-end Dolce & Gabbana-type clothing store.
Wow.
And I was like, great, that sounds like that's going to cost, you know, a good $1 million to start. Let's maybe scale back. Let's be a little bit more realistic, so to speak. And so she started over in Lawrenceville a consignment clothing store. And it did amazingly well. Fantastic. She started for under $4,000. She bought all of her display racks off of Craigslist and things like that. And, you know, to start a retail store for under $4,000 or $5,000 is an amazing accomplishment.
That is.
Well, she's doing that. Now she's, because of that, she started a business consulting other women on how to start consignment clothing stores.
Oh, my.
And then she got a job doing some speaking, and so she's on one of these tours now with the Women Entrepreneur Tour things. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like Sparkle or something, Sparkle Shine or something like that.
Something like that.
And Hustle. Sparkle and Hustle, exactly. She's one of the speakers there. So it's really exploded for her, and to watch her personality explode through the process of business ownership has been a wonderful thing as well. So
That's exciting. I'm awestruck and almost speechless, which is, Kevin will say, is weird for me. You started two shows recently, Restaurant Owner Radio. Just another something to do?
No, that has a hidden business agenda behind it. And so hopefully it will serve a business purpose one day. It hasn't yet. So far it's just been a colossal waste of time and money. You know, on the other hand, you know, I'm a very patient person. I've, you know, because of my divorce, because of the things I've been through, I've become pretty patient. I hope I can say that about myself. And so, for example, I am working on a business deal right now that I've been working on for 2 years that's fallen, you know, finally fallen together in the last month.
Mm-hmm.
And so the radio show for restaurants, I'm willing to invest a little bit more time to see if that plays out the way I hope it will.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and what is the show that's working for you?
Well, the School for Startups radio show is fulfilling all of my goals. That's a show that goes with the book, so it's one of the extensions of the book and the website. It's a great content creation tool for that to have, you know, new educational content coming out every week. So we use it for that purpose. And it's also a very good way for me to meet people. If I want to meet someone, sure. The easiest way in the world is call them up and say, hey, you want to be on my radio show?
Absolutely.
They always say, yeah, sure, I'll be on your radio. Yeah. I'll be on your radio show. I'll be on radio.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm using it for that. But, you know, the interesting thing, Dr. Tim, is that, you know, I follow my Amazon rank for the book sales every day. You know, my wife teases me that two or three times a day I will check to see how it's selling. And normally a book at my point, I'm almost 2 years out now since it was published, has fallen off the chart, right? Completely gone to zero sales. I had fantastic books that were published by the same team that I used, by the same publishing company. Other books came out that day that are now selling, you know, 1.2 million rank on Amazon. Mm-hmm. You know, they're not selling anything. But my book continues to sell very, very well, like 10, 20 copies a week, something in that range.
Oh, that's sweet.
2 years out, which
that's amazing.
It's amazing, yeah. And it does really well on Tuesday, Wednesday, right after the show comes. Right.
Well, to put that into perspective, and I'm sure you know this statistic, but 80% of all books ever written and published in any given year sell less than 300 copies.
Really?
Yeah. So if you're selling 10 copies a week, that's 520 a year. You've already smashed that. You're in the top, probably in the top 2% of books.
Well, we sold, I think, like 3,000 the first 2 weeks or something like that.
Yeah.
So we haven't hit that magic 10,000 number yet, which I hear is one of the benchmarks.
Yes, it is.
But we're certainly getting close to that.
Mm-hmm. So you wrote a book. What else do you do? How do you use writing in the work that you do?
Well, I really hadn't planned on it. It was, again, something that was sort of thrust upon me. But now I'm becoming rather obsessed with it, I think. I am working on two or three other books right now. I do believe that it could be a great part of my career, and I do plan on doing more of it because it helps feed my educational pipeline, right? It keeps me, gives me a reason to go and do interviews. It gives me a reason to talk about my primary product, which is School for Startups, the number one thing I want to sell. So,
I like that. So what book has shaped you, if there's any one book?
Well, I heard when you asked Lisa that question, I certainly like Millionaire Messenger by Stanley and Danko, Charles Stanley and Danko, the Georgia State professors, about 15-year-old book now, and they studied all the millionaires out there in the United States and came up with some amazing observations about millionaires. My favorite observation about millionaires is the cars that they drive. The number one car driven by millionaires in the United States, Ford F-150 pickup truck. Number two car, the Ford Explorer. Millionaires are not driving Mercedes and BMWs and things like that. As a matter of fact, I dated for a long time, being the swinging divorcee that I was. If a boy comes and picks you up in a Mercedes or BMW, the chances are 66% that he could not afford to buy that car, that it's some sort of lease, something like that. It's just really interesting. So I love that book. I love thinking about, again, as Lisa was saying, studying the way millionaires live. Millionaires predominantly live next door to you in very simple lives, incredibly underutilizing their financial resources in homes and cars and stuff. They're not buying all of these expensive things that the millionaires, planes and trains that they all own. They don't. Most millionaires live very simple, boring lives. And that's how they got to be rich in the first place, by not spending
their money
frivolously. Yeah. I love that book. I always recommend that. And I love anything that Ayn Rand wrote. I know she's not popular some days, and some days she is, depending on what audience you're in. But I'm an unapologetic capitalist. I believe that capitalism solves all of the problems of the world. And so I love Ayn Rand and her Fountainhead book, of course, Atlas.
Shrugged.
Some of the best stuff ever written, of course.
People want to be in contact with you.
I'm very easy. I don't hide. I'm james.beach@att.net. And I'm on Twitter, @entrepreneurjim. So I'm very easy to find. I'm on LinkedIn, and I accept all friend requests. So,
help us, though. Are you like the beach tree or the sand beach with the spelling?
We are Sandy Beach.
Okay.
Yep. So my wife had a choice. We, just had a baby, and she had a choice. Either name the dog Sunny, or the child is going to be named Sunny regardless of sex. So Sunny Beach, Sandy Beach, Rocky Beach. Yeah, yeah.
I was there.
So we now have a dog named Sunny Beach.
I like that. I think that's an appropriate point to open up the mics, questions for each other, conversation. Kevin, if you want to come in with anything more.
I always love all the guests you have on. It's always good to see Jim 2 days in a row, believe it or not. Who would have thought?
Yeah. What did you pick up from listening to his conversation?
Oh, I love it. I've always been an entrepreneur. I started my first business when I was 10 years old. I realized there weren't enough babysitters in the area. Mm-hmm. And so I gathered up all my friends and I said, I want you all to have this training. I actually trained them. What did I know at 10 years old? But I still did it. And I literally was able to fulfill orders for babysitters and take a slice of the pie, if you will. So I think entrepreneurship is what sets this country apart. It's what's going to cause the recovery to continue, because small businesses are the foundation and create more jobs than the large businesses do. And as I'm sitting here listening to Jim speak, my wheels are spinning. So many of my clients need additional income. I looked at your website. Great stuff you've got going on. I've got to read your book. And I'm thinking that, maybe this is an opportunity for us to collaborate on something where we get in front of folks and teach them some of the things, have you as a guest speaker, something like that.
Well, the thing that my wife is doing is just, it's so motivational for me. I'm writing a book right now, Dr. Tim, called Rock Stars in an Elevator, and it's 14 songs that we use to create perfect elevator pitches or value propositions. Each song leads to a perfect elevator pitch. And the last one is Kiss. You remember the rock band from Kiss with all the makeup and stuff?
Yeah.
And the point of them in the process is that if you're using Kiss as a model for your elevator pitch, you have nothing to claim except we're going to scream really loud and put a lot of makeup on and spit up some blood. You know, it's pure, you're going to make a really bad business look sexy through
bad stuff.
Artifice, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so Kiss is sort of my song of last resort. My wife is doing the business of last resort, which is starting an Amazon business. It requires absolutely no skill set. It requires absolutely no prior knowledge of anything except how to shop. Last night she was all a jitter because she got a check for $813 from Amazon directly into her account. Earlier in the week she had a check for $300 and something. She is 6 weeks into this business and has got $1,000 of checks coming in from Amazon. I mean, it's just mind-boggling to me how simple this is, literally how simple it is. For example, there are people who go into Costco, buy all of the stuff at Costco, and go and put it on Amazon and make a profit because the stuff at Costco is so cheap. That's how simple it is. And so, you know, if my wife can do this, anyone could do this.
You
know,
say,
anyone with
you
kids,
say that with great love and respect.
I'm not being. It's hard to say that without being negative about my wife. But no, you know, this is she's not a business owner. She's not an entrepreneur. She has no desire to own anything. She's not that kind of person. She's you know, she works as a computer programmer at the Children's Hospital. You know, she's very happy doing that. She's a mom. And so she's like so many of the people who find themselves divorced.
Right.
All of a sudden, you know, she's got her $30,000 a year income, and all of a sudden she's got to support the kids and something. And she's making $1,000 a month extra at night after the kid goes to sleep at night. And so I do find it incredibly motivational for women, mm-hmm. you know, who find themselves behind the eight ball financially because of divorce, or men, whoever, you know. It is incredibly motivational that she can do that. I find it just fascinating. I love it.
And see, for me as a radio host, and again, we were talking a little bit about this before we went on air, is I brought you guys on because I wanted you on. But look at that connection right there. You can see right away how what he offers could be invaluable.
Absolutely.
To your group, and that's be a good fit for you.
Well, you know, my ex-wife has a business that she should really... this is a joke, so this is all facetious. Anyway, my ex-wife, when we got divorced, she remarried 6 months later in her 30s with two kids under the age of three. And I was like, damn, girl, you are good at this. You know, you are so good at getting married. You should put on seminars for recently divorced women on how to get remarried fast because you are good at this. So if you ever want to go into that business, my ex-wife and I would love to run that business for you.
That kind of puts a different spin on it, doesn't it? Wow.
But that's a huge problem here in Atlanta. Let's be honest.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
There are tons of 30-year-old women who cannot get married here in Atlanta. It is a huge problem. Huge problem.
I'm not sure I would recommend someone get remarried 6 months after getting divorced. So
I'm going to agree with you on that. Mm-hmm. You know, I totally agree with you on that. You know,
but
still,
I think helping people find love again. That's
there
a good
you
thing.
Go. There you go.
At the appropriate time and making the appropriate decisions going into that, so that they can make it last the second time around.
She chose much better the second time, so. That seems to be a wonderful marriage.
And it's always good to hear the ex-husband say that, isn't it?
Yeah, she chose much better.
Good. And you're happy.
Hey, if your ex-wife is happy, you're happy. It's absolutely. Definitional. It's definitional.
Absolutely.
Well, you know, I got to say one thing about that. People going through divorce, how you start your divorce is generally how you end it.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can help people start smart and have more amicable ways to solve things, we're also going to save the fabric of a lot of families.
That's
really what is a driver for me because, you know, divorce rips apart families.
But
if we can show them a better path so that the parents can remain friends afterwards, they're going to be better parents to their children and co-parenting. The kids are going to grow up and not be scarred. And we can change the face of America in other ways as well. So good stuff happening here.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. You know, during my divorce, we started off very ugly, of course. By the end, this is interesting, we signed our divorce papers and then went and had lunch together, just the two of us. And since then, you know, we've been divorced for 12 years now. All of the teachers have been shocked that my children are divorced children because there is no animosity. We get along great. We vacation together. All of us do that kind of stuff. But it was critical. We went to one counselor, and I can't remember his name. Otherwise, I'd give him a shout out. He's got thousands of toys in his office. He's right there at the end of Far Road, where Far Road dead ends into Roswell. And he went and, like, in 2 or 3 hours, really straightened us out and yelled at both of us and got us back on track. And so it was absolutely fundamental that someone like that came in, other than our nasty, mean-ass divorce attorneys, to come in and say, you know, be nice to each other. And that did change it. And for 12 years now, we've gotten along great because of that conversation. So the role you play is absolutely fundamental, the whole process, the whole team. We needed a team. And we got divorced before teams were really popular, I think, because right, you know, our team was just like, you know, we'll get some assassins on my team, and the other team was, you know, bigger assassins. Mm-hmm. So
that's ugly, isn't it? And it doesn't need to be.
No.
You know?
In most cases, and you know, every situation's different, but yeah. There are people that I've interviewed and you know, they had horrible contentious divorces, but a few years down the line they were able to reconnect and work things out for the benefit of their children. Because remember, there's going to be even though you're no longer a couple, your children will grow up. They'll have graduations and weddings and children of their own. And if you as parents can look at what are you going to do for their future by cooperating,
yes,
you're going to make their lives so much easier than on their wedding day if they're having to worry about, you know, setting mom and dad on opposite sides of the church or the synagogue or yeah. whatever it may be. Giving yeah. them that gift. You know,
absolutely.
And one other thing that sometimes brings sensibility to folks' mind when I ask them, it's a key phrase in the divorce world, but would you rather fund your children's education or your attorney's children's education? You know, a lot of times that brings sense.
I like that one. I like that one. Well, you know, the clock is on us. It happens every week just like that. We welcome your comments and suggestions about content and our guests. If you would like to recommend a guest or be a guest yourself on Right Here, Right Now, let us know. Send us an email at whwnbusinessradiox@gmail.com. Thank you, Kevin, for co-hosting, keeping us on track.
No problem, anytime.
And thank you to our guests, Lisa Decker and Jim Beach. Lisa, your contact information again, please.
I can be found at divorcemoneymatters.com, and I also am on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter. So I use Lisa C. Decker on those social media platforms.
Okay, and Jim, your contact information?
Well, School for Startups or LinkedIn, Jim Beach, I accept everybody.
Okay.
I'm up to 12 contacts now, Dr.
Are you?
Tim. Yeah.
Well, maybe by the end of the day you'll have 13 and 14. Lisa
that would
and I
be
might
awesome.
Go there. Okay. Right Here, Right Now is brought to you each week by Right Choice Services. And you can learn more about Right Choice Services and how we help individuals write the book they've always wanted to write at www.write, spelled W-R-I-T-E, choiceservices.com. I hope you'll join us next week and tell your friends about the show. Send them an email. Invite them to listen live or to our downloads. Right Here, Right Now broadcasts live every Tuesday morning at 10 Eastern Time at righterightnow.businessradiox.com. And the MP3 version is available later today. I am Tim Morrison. Join us next time when business leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals come together to discuss the power of the pen and its impact on their business right here, right now.